They may tear you limb from limb.
I'm gonna tear you limb from limb.
They may fight you to the end.
We're gonna fight you to the end.
They may even call you names.
You're dumb. You're stupid.
These guys know how to hit where it really hurts.
Believe me, folks, they do not all come like that.
Oh, but they do. And you love it. WWF Primetime Wrestling Monday at 9 and All-American Wrestling tomorrow at noon, only on USA.
It is official, the very first Baby Oil and Blow. No jokes, no more tricks, no more test runs. This is the real article right
still
here.
Still jokes.
Well, yeah, still jokes.
Still
but,
jokes.
But this is not a joke. This is real, except for when we're joking. That makes sense. I, of course, am Matt O. With me, as always, he is the enforcer, the Arn Anderson to my Tully Blanchard.
Oh, wow.
He's the Kevin Nash to my... Hey, yo.
Oh, hi.
Scotty Hall. Nate Adams.
Ahoy, hoy.
Great to have you in your house here, Nate.
Yeah, it's very nice to be back in my house again this week for our first official, real, non-pilot run-through of...
Real deal.
...wrestling talk.
Real
Ready
deal.
To talk wrestling. Since this is the first one, I think maybe we should get it out of the way and explain what the show is and why we're talking wrestling.
Oh, man. It's exciting.
Concept, 80s wrestling.
80s.
Not current wrestling.
Nope.
Both of us people who grew up fell in love with wrestling in the 80s and still think that's when wrestling was good.
Oh, that's when it peaked.
Yeah, it did peak. I think technically you had Hulk Hogan on MTV. You had that cartoon.
The cartoon.
Oh, man. Sellouts in weird southern towns I've never even heard of. It was
no
huge
holds
back
barred.
Then. You know, the basic thesis of this podcast, sort of the... mantra we live by is that the reason
Gotta
pro wrestling was so successful back then was the perfect storm of cocaine, steroids, and just artistic freedom, where they jacked these guys up, made them just half dumb, half crazy, and then stuck a microphone right in their face. No scripts, no rehearsals, and whatever came out, came out.
After, of course, they were slathered down in baby oil.
Well, you got to look good on camera.
Hell
gotta
yeah.
Get that tanning in.
You got to shine.
Got to shine up those muscles.
Shine bright like a diamond in your
mind. Yeah, get a crazy look in your eye. Build some sort of character just through mostly incoherent screaming. That's when it was good.
That's the best way to do it. You got
sink
a point,
or swim.
You got a point to get across? Scream like a madman.
Some of the best shit ever is going to come out of some of the best pro wrestlers ever's mouths, and some of the worst shit you've ever heard is going to come out of some of the... biggest scrubs mouths you've ever seen, and that stuff's pretty fun, too.
And it's going to come across as the best ever.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That's what we're here to talk about.
We want to point that best out to
you. So, modern wrestling, not so into it. It's, you know, not great, but they do have the WWE Network, which is chock full of old wrestling.
Good wrestling.
So what'd we say? We said, hey, why not take advantage of that?
Put this to use,
Let's
man.
Let's start watching that old wrestling.
It's the first good thing Vince has done for us, and... over a decade.
Thank you, Vince.
He's a good man.
Okay, so every week, we're going to watch some wrestling. We're going to talk about it. Both North and South, you got two main national TV promotions
Drink
back in the
in.
80s. You got Jim Crockett Promotions on TBS.
Yeah, Jimmy C.
You got Vince McMahon's WWF on the USA Network.
Mm-hmm.
And we started off this week talking about primetime wrestling.
The show, the flagship of the WWF, their long-standing relationship with USA Television.
Monday nights.
This was it, man. This
well, back
was,
in the day, it was kind of the Saturday mornings when they did most of their stuff, but Vince, you don't have that Superstars on the network yet.
Yeah.
You were running those storylines on the Superstars. Why don't you put that show on your network? You think Vince McMahon's going to listen to this?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good. Finally, I'm going to get that message across to him then. In lieu of Superstars, though, we've got Primetime Wrestling, which is a damn good show. I used to stay up past my bedtime and watch it and then have to pretend like I was still asleep when my mom would find that I was still in the living room watching TV.
I didn't get cable till the 90s, so this is all brand new to me.
Oh, my God.
Except for the storylines that I can remember from Saturday mornings.
What did you do, like, with your evenings?
Oh, man. On a Monday? Yeah. I don't know. Was evening shade on?
Wow. I'm not sure. I don't know what that was.
What are you talking about, man? Burt Reynolds hit show. Oh. Evening shade.
Imagine something coming up like after Hercule Poirot on PBS or something. If you only. Get a lot of that.
No, this is way worse. Anywho's. Let's get right into this because there's so much to cover. We got no time to blow here.
Yeah, that's true. They do a lot of wrestling.
Crammed it all in. Whether you wanted to see it or not, it was on there. So we're going to toss here. We got primetime wrestling. It kicks off with
this. Episode 61 is the first episode they have on the WWE Network. So it's the first one we're doing. Notable because it's the first episode co-hosted by who?
Our guy, Bobby.
Bobby
the Weasel,
the Brain.
The Brain. Man. That's right.
Maybe the mascot of this podcast. He's our favorite guy. Love him so much.
He's the reason we all learned to hate wrestling, too.
Hate wrestling and hate just the common working man.
Yeah.
Like,
because he was always quick to point it out.
I despise the middle class. Yeah. And it's because Bobby Heenan hammered that lesson into me very early on.
Why do hard work when you can have somebody else do it for you?
There's no reason to.
And just, claim all the credit.
Ham and eggers. So, we open up the show. We got our opening, which pretty standard studio show.
Oh, but the intro, real quick.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They do their, like your basic every wrestling show does, like, oh, check out these hits of people wrestling.
Yeah,
cool
definitely.
Cool moves.
Little montage.
And it was like a solid minute and a half of nothing but guys doing just pile drivers and Irish whips.
Oh, yeah.
Over and over.
Big high spots back in those early 80s days. Nice little,
that's how you hook them in.
Nice little song playing over that, too. We'll layer some of that under us talking here right now to really spruce up the presentation, let people know what we're looking at.
It's beautiful.
Bobby the Brain Heenan, the co-host to regular host Gorilla Monsoon.
Only because Jesse the Body Ventura was in Brazil.
Absolutely.
Filming that big movie.
I guess that was...
That must have been Predator. That was 86, right?
I'd say so, yeah. And that's at least the cover for why Heenan's taken over, because I don't think... Yeah, it was Heenan from this point on, like all the way through 92. So
try some of this. Turn you into a goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
Mm-hmm, I don't want to say the first half. That's borderline offensive.
I don't got time to do studio wrestling shows.
Yes, that's also our mantra.
His big catchphrase.
Yeah.
So yeah, Gorilla Monsoon looking great in a deep red burgundy suit with a pink ruffled shirt and a bow tie.
Like late 70s ruffled shirt.
Classic.
In 1986.
Yeah, definitely.
Looking
still
spot on.
That like mid 70s look in 1986 looking great. These guys have some banter. They got the best banter of all time.
They work so well.
Chemistry between two. Off the charts. Basic format of the show. They're sitting there behind a desk. They throw it to a match. Come back. They talk some more. Throw it to a match. So we get our first match, and it's all in Madison Square Garden this
MSG,
week.
MSG, baby.
From the Mecca. They put that over big like it's a big deal. We got Nikolai Volkov.
Do they still do that?
No.
Do they still like MSG as a big deal?
I don't think they even tape TV there anymore, do they?
I think
that's
a
shame.
Down.
Used to be a big deal, but not anymore. Now we got Nikolai Volkov, the evil Russian, versus Tony Garea, the guy who looks like
your dad
wandering around the kitchen in his tidy whities in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he does. Nikolai, of course, is accompanied by classy Freddie Blassie with the cane and
manager
the sequin coat.
Extraordinaire.
You gotta give respect to the managers and valets. Like if we fail to mention one, I want you to email us, whatever, get a hold of us, because that's what this decade
feedback
is all
about. Feedback at babyoilandblow.com. We got an email address. They can actually do that.
But yeah, it's another big time lost art of the 80s is the importance of managers and valets.
You bring out a bad guy and he's got a manager with him. It makes him more of a bad guy.
This is more of what Heenan taught us, which is use somebody else to make you look better.
It was wrap up in just the warm blanket of these evil cocky managers. Just like pure nostalgia. You know what else is pure nostalgia? First thing we hear, the voice of the Fink announcing these guys to the ring. This is the soundtrack of my childhood. This is the soundtrack of wrestling as far as I'm
that
concerned.
That forced deep voice.
The Fink's still alive. The Fink should still be the announcer. He should be out there just doing his fake announcer voice. It's beautiful.
He gets it, man.
So this match starts. real, just classic 80s up north style wrestling, which means two big dudes walloping each other with haymakers over and over
again. After Nikolai Volkoff sings the Soviet national anthem,
that was,
of course,
a nice touch.
Yeah,
the crowd didn't like sitting through that.
You want somebody to hate you?
Uh-huh.
Go out of your way to point out you're foreign.
Absolutely. Or do karaoke. And essentially, he's combining those two things, the two most hateable things I can think of, foreigners and karaoke.
Boom.
All in one guy.
But like you said, two big boys just walloping each other.
I got, maybe I'm going to get a little edgy here.
Okay.
I don't know if I can use a little crass language on here, but I thought this match stunk.
Wow.
P.U.
Really?
Yeah, this was stinky, man.
Yeah, I don't have much about what happened in the ring as much as what I saw, because
a couple of boring guys.
It was a stinker.
Boring matches.
Yeah, just except for the only thing I did enjoy physicality wise, Nikolai's like over the top swinging punches.
They were pretty ridiculous.
Try to knock old Tony Garea out. That
Tony
was good Garea, stuff.
This guy was
do a little homework on him.
You mean, well, not really. I know he was an agent for the longest time, like back when I think being an agent first became a thing. So he's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Backstage, like helping the people figure out their matches.
He could do it all.
So I think maybe this was probably the end of his career, right before he started that. He did a nice old school atomic drop at one point, which I appreciated.
He was
didn't see that move anymore.
Just
laying a guy down on your knee butt first.
Yeah.
Hitting that tailbone.
I'm gonna slam your butthole dead into my knee. You're
that big
jump around.
Jump around on the tippy toes, like, ooh, my butthole.
Ooh,
that's
my biscuits.
It's always a fun thing to see.
That's good stuff.
Just boring, but then, like, even the story they were trying to tell, like, Gurria's getting the shit beat out of him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he starts to make a little bit of a comeback, but gets cut off, and then make sure he's not coming back. Freddie Blassie, classic manager interference.
Yes.
He gets him. Volkoff gets him up on the ropes, gets his face stuck out to the outside. They make sure the ref isn't looking, and then classic classy Freddie, he takes that trademark cane of his and bam, gives him a shot, which should be nice. It should be like, oh, this guy was just about to make a comeback, and now they cheated.
Yeah.
But instead of like selling it and like, oh, God, they cheated, now I can't win, he just like shrugs that off instantly and then starts wailing on Volkoff for the first time in the match.
Here's some punches.
The cheating amounted to nothing. There was no point in it. They completely ignored it.
The cheating is always the payoff.
Yeah, the cheating's the whole point. If you're going to have him cheat in the match, that's the whole point. That's why the face isn't winning.
Felt slighted.
If you got the good guy just still wailing away after it and not even hurt, what's the point? Garia, you're stupid. That was a stupid way to work this match. You look like a moron.
The one thing I did enjoy about Garia's offense was he was just doing like nonstop asking the crowd hype up, you know, like, should I hit this guy this way? That kind of move, you know, where you like grab the legs, like, I'm going to punch him. Should I punch him one?
If what you're doing's, like, you know, engaging, probably you don't have to do that. They're gonna tell you already.
No, I like them.
I feel like
asking
if you're
for
asking the audience over
time.
And over again, something went wrong.
Yeah.
So then, after Garea stupidly just shrugs off that interference and chooses that spot to like have his big run with all his lame offense, and the match just kind of ends when Volkoff picks him up and gives him the weakest goddamn backbreaker I've ever seen.
Oh, he hit none of it.
Laying down your sweet, sweet little 4-year-old on a pillow to go to bed at night.
He goes to set it up like it's essentially like a gorilla press into a backbreaker. He doesn't get him up all the way or clean in the least bit. And then when he comes down,
like
his knee like comes right behind Garia's ass, completely
like
missing any bit of his back.
Snuggled him down to the mat and pinned
him. So he just like lifted him and dropped him essentially. The one thing I did like about Garia was he's from New Zealand or Australia, one of the two.
Maybe.
But his tats,
his
sweet arm tattoos, suggested he's done time.
Suggested Australian prison,
specific. That's what I saw.
Well, they say that all of Australia is a prison in some regards.
Well, good day, mate.
Who knows? I'm not going to make any assumptions about his past.
Oh,
that
and also,
first match, not a good way to start the show.
But one good thing about that first match, we get the classic Madison Square Garden microphone.
Oh yeah, just like coming down from the ceiling.
Yeah, old with school like the three microphones. Yeah, with that nice MSG across
it. Yeah, that really makes things feel classy.
That's classy.
Old school. Second matchup, Jake the Snake Roberts. In his run here in the company, he's still a heel, still a dastardly heel, and he's going up against...
Still not in very good shape.
He was never in great shape.
That's what I love about the guy.
He looked like he had good wind. He was out there.
Well, yeah, but he always had a gut.
He was really just like striding across the ring like a gazelle. Oh, just like,
God, did he look good.
Two or three lunges and he'd be across that 20-foot ring.
Caught up with you, Scotty McGee.
Wrestling Scott McGee, who looked to be in good shape, but is still just kind of a jobber, so he didn't do... Yep. He looked like he could have been Disco Inferno's dad, I felt like.
I would also like to point out that this match, if you're watching just for the jobbers,
sure,
or the enhancement wrestlers,
a lot of times
like
I
do,
just, yeah, watching for the jobbers.
This match signifies the last of the jobber being in good shape.
That might be true. Yeah. It's often
so drink it in.
You get the local guys, the weekend
drink
warriors coming in, and they're not in as good a shape as the guys who were on TV all the time. Maybe Scott McGee was an up and comer. Maybe he just, I don't know, too short, couldn't talk, whatever. But he looked like he was trying to take it seriously, but no.
He had a nice red coat and red trunks.
This was a great jobber match because Jake just fucking laid this dude out.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, Jake's punches are outstanding.
Oh,
and like
he's fast, crisp.
Beating the crap out of him with these punches. And Jake doesn't do much in the ring. He's got punches. He's got, like, his selling when, like, the other guy's on offense. Then he's got, like, his finisher, and that's all he needs.
But, he just works the shit out of it.
Absolutely.
He doesn't need anything else.
Very
than
high
that.
Energy here. He's still young. He's not quite just been drugged through the ringer and rode hard and put away wet like he was just a few years after that. I mean, Jake hit it hard. He lived a lifetime here in about 5 or 6 years. And,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But here he's still looking good. I mean, there's no question. There was actually a Hogan chant during this match at one point when Jake was healing
I
it
missed
up.
That one.
Already the crowd is like, we want this guy in the main event against Hulk Hogan. Like, he was going to be a main eventer. Clearly, I mean, just doing stuff like pointing to his temple to let you know how smart he is.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good heel move.
That's
right
good
there.
Stuff right there.
Well, tap, tap. That's where my brain is.
Yeah.
This is where I do my thinking. You idiots in the crowd.
You're
probably
not as
don't
smart
think
as I
much
am.
At all.
No.
I'm sure your grades were
point that out
not
to
so
them.
Good.
Point it out to them.
Mine were exceptional.
I thoroughly enjoyed, because of course it's Jake the Snake, so we got Damien.
Oh, yeah.
In the corner.
Big old snake.
And, The announce team. Oh, we didn't throw it to our announce
Lord
team
Alfred
yet.
Hayes
yeah, we got
out
Lord
there
Alfred
talking
Hayes
with Gorilla.
With Gorilla.
And for some goddamn reason.
Erna Ladd.
Big Cat. The Big Cat doing some sort of...
I thought it was Teddy Long at first because they sounded a lot
alike.
Yeah,
they didn't mention that he was out there. And then at one point he just started talking. And I was like, what's that?
After that first match in the studio, Brain and Gorilla are like, oh, that's Ernie Ladd, by the way.
Just... kind of doing the analyst role a little bit, but he doesn't really...
He's kind of doing the Booker T thing.
Analyzing anything.
He's kind of doing the Booker T thing where the other two guys talk about the match, and then he just kind of spouts off about whatever.
One thing I liked about the commentary on this match, I got a classic Gorilla Monsoon mention of the occipital protuberance.
Oh, good stuff.
Weird little, pseudo-real biology tries to throw into his...
he likes sneaking that in
very
there.
Very enthusiastically. Loved hearing about the occipital protuberance.
But I loved the announce team hyping up Damien.
Oh, just like Lord Alfred Hayes especially just could not get over how this was the biggest snake. And the cameraman would always just be like shooting the match
from behind the snake
was in. So like
that's
you're always aware
dynamite
that snake's
stuff.
There.
It's like when Taker used to have the urn and it was just like, ooh, this urn. I'm not sure about
there's
it, friend.
Something going on with this urn.
You don't get anything like that
you
anymore.
You get like the snake bag too. The snake starts slithering around in there. It's wiggling around.
Your friends would be like, "It's not a real snake. Bag's moving, man. That's a real snake."
It's really a great visual too when he just like knocks the guy out with the DDT, has him laying in the ring, and just brings out that giant snake. Like, the crowd was ready to riot when he pulled that gigantic snake out of a bag. They were just like, oh, shit, look at that snake.
As Ernie Ladd pointed out, that's not a little pig.
No, it wasn't.
That is not a little pig.
It was not even a... It was a reptile, is what it wasn't even a mammal.
No.
Not even close to a pig.
No.
But yeah, it's slithering all over his downed opponent after that. And
he's just slamming
just
it.
Just a great visual. That snake just slithering on his face.
You probably can't
all
do
over
that
its weird body
anymore because of animal cruelty and PETA.
God, like, especially Jake the Snake Roberts, famous crackhead. Like,
just
imagine how that snake was getting treated. Him dragging it all across the goddamn country back
just
then. Like,
drinking and...
What was it eating?
Sticking it in women's hoo-has.
Like, yeah, was it just in the bag 24/7? Like, just in his hotel room? Like,
or
in that bag?
Or did they ride together? He might have just let it out.
Maybe he let the snake drive. That could have been the thing.
I had one too many... drinks. I'm gonna need you to take the wheel.
Yeah, sure. We got 6 hours to get to the next town. I'm gonna get some shut eye.
How often do you sleep?
Yeah, but Jake, one of the greatest of all time. I mean, he talks different from everybody else.
Yep.
He just seems totally real. Here, when he's a heel, he's taking a powder on the outside. He's begging off. He's calling for timeouts. He's at one point, I loved it. Was this old Scotty McGee kind of had him by the ankles. And Jake was just clawing at the ground, trying to get to his snake bag to throw his snake at him.
That's a good move.
That was a great, just cowardly, desperate heel move. Kicks his ass coming straight out to show everybody, like, look, this guy's nothing. I'm above him.
Mm-hmm.
Gets a little cocky, which backfires on him. And then McGee gets some offense in. It allows Jake to act like a complete fucking coward and just a desperate loser.
Yep.
And then, you know, he gets his composure and... finishes the guy off with a devastating DDT. That's classic heel work.
And talked a ton of shit before he went for that pin.
Absolutely.
He hit that DDT
and let everybody know
everybody
you're better than them.
Know.
But then show some ass and let them know, like, oh, no, really, I'm all show, so you really should just hate me. No, but that's the thing that people forget these days. They're all about being cocky and arrogant, but then they're not able to make themselves look like a moron when they're supposed to.
Quit getting yourself over.
Key move. That's why
Jake was one
of the greatest.
Get yourself under.
Yeah, so we move on, and another guy, another big name from the 80s
coming up,
doing an interview with good old Mean Gene Okerlund, best interview guy in the history of wrestling. Both because of his sort of honeyed voice and because you could always tell he was a little bit lit up when he was out there, which was fun. You should be lit up if you're going to be on a wrestling show.
Absolutely.
And drink a couple gins before you go out there.
So
why not?
Get loose.
A couple of oat sodas. Whatever it takes you to get through the day. He's talking to Tito Santana.
Oh, boy.
Arriba. Spicy jalapeno. All the other different, like, Mexican stuff they'd say when he would wrestle.
As they throw to Tito, Brain goes out of his way to throw in an amigo comment. Mm. For no reason. There's nothing attached to it. They're just gorillas tossing to Tito, and Brain just under his breath. Amigo.
You went for that sort of like a border patrol joke or whatever after Tito's interview was over, and it was a rare miss from the Brain, and not just because it was racist. Like, if it's racist and it's funny, I'll laugh at it, but it was just like, I forget the exact wording, but it just landed with a thud. He was just like, yeah, Tito's a Mexican. Fuck that guy.
He pointed out something that I thought of immediately and almost wrote down and then had to write down once Brain brought it up, was the fact that Tito sound just like the Saturday Night Live skit of that dude doing the Dominican baseball player, the baseball being very, very good to me.
Tito, it's not because this guy's like a foreign wrestler like fresh off the border, can't speak English good. Tito just can't talk.
Like, cannot
this
talk
man cannot string two
all
goddamn words together. He sounded terrible in this. I try to go by the rules. I fight by the rules.
But you know what, man?
It was real bad.
It was real great, too.
Not getting anything over. Well, yeah, this is where you get out there and you got guys, they're either soaring or they're crashing, and this is a guy crashing.
He pointed out everything he needed to point out. He got his lame-ass character
like
over.
Like, my man. My man.
I wrote my man down, too.
This guy's my man.
This guy's my man. I like how he looked like Jaime Escalante.
Oh, yeah, his sort of, like, shaded glasses he was wearing were super cool.
How do I reach these kids?
Yeah, he looked looked pretty cool, but once he opened his mouth, that coolness went away.
Hey, agree to disagree, my man.
He kept saying, fight fire with fire.
Yeah.
Fight fire with fire.
How do you fight fire,
over
my
again,
man?
Over and over again. It's just,
with water?
I feel like that's the one bullet point he got was fight fire with fire. So he just...
Well, and he brought up...
Like, Mean Gene kept hitting him in the ribs with his elbow, like, Tito, say some more. So he just kept repeating, like,
my man.
You know, fight fire with fire, my man.
My man. He brought up one of my favorite things in the 80s that needs to come back. I don't know why it's not back. People just hand out dumbass title matches willy-nilly because they feel like they should have them. I'm talking about the championship committee.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They
yeah,
did make a big
he was
deal
quick
to
reference.
Like, you know, we'd like to get you that match, but it's not in our hands. It's
up to the championship
governing bodies. Fictionally,
Jack Tunney.
They make wrestling fun.
And the championship committee.
Sure.
I don't care if you don't ever have to establish who they are. I don't ever have to see their faces. I just like to know that there's some powers that be that are controlling it besides Triple H and Stephanie.
Yeah, Jim Crockett Promotions used to do a lot of like shots of just like 8 or 9 like old white guys sitting around a table, and like you're supposed to be like these are the big wigs in wrestling. These are the minds that are making it happen.
I don't know.
I liked that. I liked just sort of some establishing shots that like you know, probably these old Jewish men are in charge behind the scenes. They rule the entertainment industry.
It lets you know it's bigger than us, you know?
Yeah,
definitely. This isn't just some willy-nilly thing. There's money changing hands. This is a real
ignore the reality that it's just like one carny in charge of everything.
No, this is a real, honest-to-gosh business.
Fake like it's real sports.
God bless them.
Fake like it's real sports.
God bless them.
Our next match, King Tonga versus Paul Christie.
Paul Christie.
This was kind of another come down after that great Jake Jobber match.
Yeah.
King Tonga.
Oh,
of course,
Christie might have been in all right shape.
Became,
I can't remember too well.
Haku was in great shape, King Tonga here, but that guy's a heel all the way through. He's got no reason being a fiery young baby face here.
But they tried.
The crowd just didn't care about him at all.
He was jacked. He looked great.
Yeah, he was real thick, real powerful. Paul Christie.
Those traps, my goodness.
Paul Christie had a goddamn pompadour like it was the 1950s or he was Nick Bockwinkel or I don't know what he was trying to do.
He was not in good shape.
This guy.
He had that sweet pompadour.
He looked great.
And that, that fringe vest.
Yeah,
Oh, that was good stuff.
Not much of a match here because Christie's just jobbing. The crowd doesn't care what Tong is doing, but I liked some of what Christie was showing. Like, he was doing some crazy noises, and he was, like, clawing and biting. Like, it was some good, like, little animal hillbilly heel stuff. And he's like, kind of like a little bit of Terry Funk-esque, like, selling at one point, too. He was doing a lot of, like, it hurts so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I really like when people get mouthy when they're getting their asses kicked.
He had a really good... He was getting his ass whipped and trying to throw punches and to no effect.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he got a good choke in the ropes.
Yeah.
Illegal choke.
Yeah, he was really just making a lot of weird noises
and
in
his
mouth
eyes,
while he was doing
man.
It. Yeah.
He had great, crazy eyes.
Yeah, he was like a wounded animal out there.
You remember when...
the pompadour.
The first time that Backlund went off on Bret Hart and stands out to all
absolutely.
Of us as children.
Absolutely.
And he's just staring at his hands, doing the my hands bit. And just that look on his eyes, like, that resonates with a kid. That's good stuff.
Yeah, like, this guy probably did a bump before he went out there for this match.
Yeah, but as your kid, you don't understand that.
For real.
You just think that guy's insane.
That's what it takes.
Yeah,
definitely.
And that's good. That's called commitment.
Ended in a flying headbutt. And that was the best part of the match because that was a little stiffsky, brother.
A little bit.
That looked like Christie was dead after that. Christie dead.
Yeah.
Tonga just straight up full speed.
Coming off the top
all
rope.
All his 350 pounds or whatever, headbutt into his jaw.
Yeah.
Go to sleep.
Yeah.
We might not have ever seen Paul Christie ever again.
All I took from this match was Tonga did a little, hey, I'm the foreign guy dance.
Mm-hmm.
And, people, they hate the foreigners.
That's true.
If you're pointing out you're foreign, but if you're foreign and you're dancing, they love you.
Okay, sure.
They love you.
Definitely.
And again, I'm not trying to be, you know,
get out there, shuck and jive a little bit.
This is just what I'm noticing in the 80s.
Let us know that you're willing to work to be accepted in this country.
Also, of course, we had plenty of racist comments of coconuts and bananas.
Yeah, definitely.
You don't get a body like that just from eating coconuts and bananas, you know.
Yeah.
We should probably get the That's Racist drop.
I actually,
that's racist.
Yeah. Also, I wouldn't mind like a t-shirt that says you don't get a body like this eating coconuts and bananas.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I'd wear that all the time.
We like talking about how good we look all the time.
We do look pretty good, yeah, to be fair to us. Probably the most handsome, in-shape podcasters in the podcasting business.
If you come back to our website, check it out in a month, we should have those shirts ready to go by then.
Yeah, also probably just some shirtless pics of us, maybe. Well, just to bring the people in, get some traffic moving.
Give them something to look at.
Yeah, nothing going on here with the young King Tonga, but soon they were calling him Haku. They brought in Tama, I believe.
Then we got something.
He was the Islanders. They stuck him with Heenan. Heenan could talk for him. That was much better. That was much better.
Yeah, now you got a product.
Moving on to, for me, man, the big goddamn surprise of the show. Match of the night, as far as I'm concerned. I love this shit. We got Leapin' Lanny Poffo versus Nice France's own heel of all heels, René Goulet.
Yeah.
What did you think about Lanny Poffo and René Goulet? Did you like it as much as I did?
The number one Frenchman?
As far as
René Goulet?
In my heart and in the minds of everyone in the world, I would assume. Self-proclaimed.
What this match thoroughly reinstated to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is why Lanny Poffo never was anything.
Oh, you kidding me? You mean like Lanny here?
Well, let's start it off with his poem, shall we?
His poem.
Once he's done throwing frisbees.
The frisbee to the audience. Bit? That's
if that's not
going to
get
bit,
you over with the audience. I don't know what else.
Love getting free stuff.
Yeah, they love that crap.
Look at that frisbee flying through the air.
So he gets hold of the mic and he's like, I'm Lanny Poffo. I've got a poem for everyone.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. I've been working on it all day. He says, all day.
Did you work today?
I took off.
Oh, that makes sense.
Just for this. He's the number one Frenchman, René Goulet. I've heard that name over and over again. I have to admit, he is number one.
There we go.
Number one on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah, I don't think that was even iambic pentameter. Not the greatest.
That was...
But that's what shows you they hadn't quite figured out Lanny Poffo, because soon he was doing the same bit, but as the genius, a heel, this guy is goofy, he's never admitted as much, but, you know, he just sets off your gaydar instantly, so you know that, back in the day,
even
the
as
80s,
a young kid, and not that
nobody,
there's anything wrong with it.
No, but you know that all these guys in charge backstage, other than Pat Patterson, I'm sure, were just like, I'm not really comfortable pushing this guy. It was the mid-80s, and granted, maybe he's not at all, and I don't think he's ever been on the record as saying he is, but he just he comes off as that, and, if you want to tap into that and have him be like sort of an effeminate fey heel, which he was later as a genius, that's gonna work. Him is just like the weird, overly sincere, grinning, cheesing, mustachioed face, doesn't quite
work. Get him over as a face, and this is what I was thinking when watching him move around, some of his mannerisms, this and that, the mustache. He should have just had a Freddie Mercury bit going.
Definitely.
You could have got him over.
He didn't have the sexual energy of a Freddie Mercury, though. Yeah. That guy came
out
and,
Vince will teach you how to be sexual. Everybody knows that.
Hey, goddamn, pal.
Any amount of money to see Vince McMahon pulling Lanny Poffo aside and showing him how to exude sexual energy.
You do that kip up, and then you move your hips. You move your hips.
The hips. Yeah, I knew he'd go right for the hips. We were on the same page with that one. But yeah, it's just dorky. Poffo comes off as dorky, but
absolutely.
I can see maybe why starting off they tried to make him a good guy at the beginning, because he's Leapin' Lanny, and he's jumping around, and he's very agile. He's showing off a lot of agility here.
Look, we've talked enough about him because he doesn't matter. Let's talk about the real treat
in
this match.
René
Goulet kills it.
Vague memories
flair.
Of him as a kid, but did
French
not,
is flair, man.
Did not appreciate him when I was a kid at all, and just... He is a big eye-opening experience here, a revelation. What a great heel. He had that ratty old sleeveless dress shirt that was bedazzled as a ring coat.
The Michael Jackson bedazzled
glove. Michael Jackson glove to let people know he does the claw hold as a finisher.
Over 10,000 diamonds on that club.
That mop of curly hair that was so balding in the middle, he just looked like Bozo the Clown got left out in a rainstorm.
He looked so good.
Just like a sort of a... His body, like you look at him and you're like, that's somebody's grandma who still stays really active.
He's got
good for her. That grandma's really active.
He's got current Flair body, and I'm not talking last time Flair wrestled.
No,
I'm talking just got out of the hospital this week.
Flair body. Yeah, definitely.
And the big reveal, when he takes the bedazzled glove off to reveal the sweet fingerless glove.
Oh, well, he wrestled the whole match in one fingerless glove.
If that's not 80s badass.
This guy looked like he should have been working the puke bucket outside of a zipper at a local carnival.
Oh,
like,
man. And who's to say he's not?
Well, yeah, I'm sure eventually he got there. But also, just solid heel in the ring. These guys did a lot of great mat wrestling.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
A lot of little... Goulet got a Poffo there and like a nice strong arm hold. And while he's doing it, he's just at the same time dragging the laces of his boot up and down Poffo's eyes. That's great.
And as Gorilla
right
said,
there.
He really would have liked to have seen a short arm scissors like right about then, because as he put it, he hadn't seen a short arm scissors in a coon's age.
That's true. Like he's watching all those MMA fights back in the early 70s, I guess. And
a lot of people don't understand, before, Kenny Shamrock's putting it on the map.
Sure, sure.
Gorilla Monsoon was doing it in somebody's basement.
Well, I hear that in the early 70s, he was kind of there at the beginning of the Gracie family. He was down in Brazil. He taught them a lot of their holds. Modern jiu-jitsu kind of came out of Gorilla Monsoon and just his interactions when he was down there buying weed in Brazil.
Gorilla Brazil. You do the math, man.
There's so many gorillas in Brazil.
Yeah. You don't get a body depending like that eating coconuts and bananas.
Spelling. No, you don't.
No, not at all.
Back to
Goulet's magnificent
back
body.
To Goulet, it's just, he's out there. He's begging off. The crowd's getting on his ass. They hate him.
He's doing one better than the beg off. Which is, he gets close enough to the ropes and knows you're about to do a little offense and then buries his head in the rope.
I'm in the ropes.
Yeah.
Get off me, man. Get off me.
That's better.
Ref to like get this guy away
it's
from
like,
you.
It's like, he's like, I'm not being cowardly. I follow the rules.
Still very
so you should too.
Still very passive aggressive.
He's a good man.
And I noticed a guy, probably about the second row at this point, he's just like yellow shirt, red hat. This guy
Hulkster,
great fan.
Yeah,
he's... Just fist bumping, jaw jacking. He's getting up. He's screaming the whole show. He's in these guys' faces. And, like, that's what I want to see from a wrestling fan.
Absolutely.
Like, I want you upset. I want you yelling. I don't want you trying to, like, I don't know, wear some sort of signature outfit so everybody knows who you are.
No.
Or, like, come up with chants. You could tell, I'm the one who started that chant. Fuck your chants. Just, like, get drunk and get mad and slobber all over the wrestlers and call them pieces of shit. And, get mad at the cheating.
He's just swinging his arms around, having a good time.
Structure of this match, though, great. Poffo's the babyface.
Mm-hmm.
He perseveres. He fights through all the cheating. He fights through the claw hold. He
hits a sunset flip, which the people pop huge
big high
for.
Spot. Big high spot. And, after he fights from under, he fights through everything in front of him. He wins the match by leaping, because he's goddamn leaping Lanny Poffo, there you go. Leaping Lanny. So, stuck to his gimmick, stuck to great babyface structure.
Even though Brain questioned that three count.
Sure.
A little,
Rene Goulet, great heel.
Oh, also
ran him through the whole match, controlled
credit,
the whole thing.
Big credit to Rene Goulet's full-on dick readjustment.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, man, they're working in the corner. He gets up at some point and just full-on, like, pulls the trunks out, throws the hand all the way down there. And I was like, that looks like a full-on dick adjustment.
Oh,
it's like, well, maybe he's going to be doing, like, the pull a foreign object out later kind of thing.
French jambone down there.
Yeah,
right?
But, it never came back to that. So it was just, he decided, my penis is in an uncomfortable position as I'm wrestling this match. Give me a second. I'm just going to reach down there. Put the whole thing in my hand and move it.
Decades before HD cameras. I'm sure nobody noticed. It's not a big deal.
That's classy, though.
This was my match of the night. I loved it. Thought it was great.
Absolutely. Gorilla in the post-match when they kick it back to the studio.
Back in the studio.
I liked Gorilla commenting on how, Mr. Poffo was lucky. He missed at least three high-risk maneuvers. Mm.
That's what they call them, high-risk maneuvers.
Yeah, high-risk maneuvers that he counted. He was lucky to come out missing those moves, to which Brain pointed out, that's because he's a punk.
Cutting to the quick.
No explanation, just,
Brain's not a fan. We're moving on to a classic match from 1977. We got Mr. Fuji and Toru Tanaka versus Jose Gonzalez and Lenny Hurst in a 2 out of 3 falls match.
The Professor Tanaka.
This was weird. I don't know why we were seeing this. Like, I guess sort of.
Got to fill time.
Brain and Bobby were talking after the match, like Tanaka's training new wrestlers out in California. So it seemed like maybe they were...
We'll have to watch
this match
in weeks to
on
come.
To reestablish Let's him because he was going to come back and like, but I don't remember him coming back and managing in
I.
the 80s. I think he was just doing film work then.
Tell you what I did notice in this match, though. Tanaka's calves.
Oh, man. This guy is thicker than a Snicker.
Oh.
He looks like something Donkey Kong would be chucking down a ramp. This guy is just like round, and it's muscle, and it's just
he looked like Donkey Kong.
Yeah, he could swallow Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
This guy was rough. And this was kind of a crazy match, too. These guys were taking a lot of just weird dumb bumps, like through the ropes, like real hard
heads.
To the outside. And like
loose-ass ropes,
crowds
man.
Going crazy.
Every
like,
time they hit those ropes, they just like exploded.
Those
like,
70s
good
ropes
Lord.
Had just so much slack.
Yeah.
The crowd back then was just insane. These people were nuts. But
speaking of the crowd, I got to give my shout out to a good friend of mine, and that's a Japanese dude in his 60s, maybe 70s, sitting ringside smoking a giant cigar.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
70s were a different time, but we're talking 80s here, so let's just sort of move past
fast
this
forward.
Match because I don't think it's got anything to do with
Tanaka
the rest
Fuji
of,
win in a 2 of 3 falls.
Yeah.
First fall
it was
comes
all about
by the kamikaze clothesline, which was a sling blade, and then a Japanese
bumps.
Sleeper hold.
Those opening bumps that we first
yeah.
saw. That was
yeah.
that was the whole
them
thing.
Them tangled up in the ropes.
Move on to Siviafi. Am I saying that
Doesn't
correctly?
Matter.
Is it Siviafi?
Does not matter who. Even though he was the big wrestler, it's all about the enhancement wrestler. In
Iron
this
Mike
one.
Sharp is one
living
of
effing
the best
legend.
Wrestling jobbers of all time.
No, he's one of the best wrestlers
sure,
of all of the
I
80s.
We'll agree with that. Steadfast. He's always out there doing strong work. Siviafi, he's a young guy. They're kind of just trying to recreate Jimmy Snuka with
yeah.
I guess like
I don't
he's
even
got the
remember
same tights and everything.
I don't even remember what they said about him, but I pointed out in my notes that apparently it was racist, so you know,
got some more racial stereotypes.
Yep.
One of the foundations of 1980s wrestling.
We got
Iron Mike Sharp highlight of this match, dude.
All is yelling.
Well, takes a drop kick, bumps himself over the top rope.
Oh.
Into the
up,
outside, all the way
over
to
the rail,
bumps over the rail into the
crowd,
just on one drop kick.
Crowd's eating it
like,
up, man.
Showing serious ass, looking like a complete just moron.
And just
fool.
Screaming
like,
the entire time.
Incredulous that this is happening to him.
The entire time he's screaming and just making weird noises.
Another point he had. Siviafi up in a bear hug, just like an elevated bear hug.
He's just
doing this rhythmic thrusting, a little bounce up
his
and down.
Hands firmly around his ass.
Weirdly sexual.
Yeah. Oh,
weirdly
yeah.
sexual.
Even Monsoon was like, ooh, he's got that hold a little low.
Yeah, it was I felt like you could put a Brazzers logo on that.
Might,
make a sweet little meme for the internet. For the
hey
internet
now.
There. But yeah, I don't know.
He might have been ribbing the new guy.
I don't care. I don't think this guy stuck around.
No.
Probably Snuka came back soon after his legal problems or whatever was going on at this moment happened.
Oh, he might have been killing one of his wives.
They got rid of him. Oh, I'm sure he was killing somebody, Matt.
Yeah.
You don't get a criminal record like that just from eating coconuts and bananas.
No, you do. You do not at all.
There's a lot of drugs involved, too. A
lot of drugs involved. Shout out to the audience again. There
was
a dude.
The audience.
At one point,
audience people back in the day because they didn't have them lit up like they do now, and you really got to get some action on the outside before you can see these goons.
Iron Mike was taking a powder at some point, and they throw to like one of the corners of the ring, and there was a guy maybe probably about 3 or 4 rows back, full on Dexy's Midnight Runner outfit.
Oh wow!
Like just overalls.
This is how I came to the wrestling show.
And just the bandana around his neck.
Here in Manhattan, New York, United States of America.
Here I am. Take it in.
The real real event, real highlight of this part of the show, not the CVAPI match. It's the Jimmy Hart interview that came afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked this interview. Jimmy Hart is just
Hart was
screeching.
Yeah.
He had like a real Don Knotts quality to him at this point, like I felt like, where he's just playing the absurd, just like over the top, like scaredy cat type character.
I can't believe what they did to me.
Oh man, it was so good.
Jack, you're what?
And it was the great work he was doing was juxtaposed. Once again, you got these amazing highs and these amazing lows in 80s wrestling.
This might have been the lowest of lows.
Bring in Dory Funk Jr.
You mean Big Hoss Funk?
They're calling him Hoss Funk.
Yeah, they are.
A little bit before my time, but as I understand it, he's a former world champion and a legend.
I've come to understand that as well. This is probably the first time I've watched him cut a promo, though.
He can't talk for the life of him.
No.
This is one of the worst promos I've ever heard.
And he was like getting irritated when the guys who could talk were talking. And
well, that's because he's a legend. He's like, outside.
I'm trying to get my point across.
He sounded sort of like a hillbilly Vincent Price. But that sounds like a charisma. You got to take all that charisma and personality.
Imagine
that
as non-interesting as possible.
Vincent Price was a hillbilly who just like was nearly in a coma. That was Hoss Funk talking right here. It was terrible.
I tell you who wasn't in a coma.
Adrian Adonis.
Killing it.
He was high as a Georgia
Killing
pine.
Killing it.
High as a Georgia
you
pine.
You call it what you will. I'll call it what
Glossy
I see.
Glossy-eyed,
Killing it.
Cheesy
he
grin.
He had a black eye, sir. All right? He got hit in the eye. That's why his eye was... No, it was real.
This talk about sloppy bodies. At this point in his career...
He looked great.
This guy, he was carrying around a lot of loose change.
He looked great.
So, yeah, he was very pleased with himself. He's visibly giggling at his, you know...
Everything?
Effeminate gay guy routine that he does.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm not sure that he knew the cameras were rolling while
he
did this.
Some weirdly sexual, effeminate comment to which Mean Gene says, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole, to which he like quickly and immediately responds under his breath, what about a 5-foot pole? When it was just like, well done, sir.
That's great. That's
well
great.
Done. You want to creep him out, that's how you do it. Highlight of that whole interview, though, is them talking about whatever midget they were wrestling at the time.
Oh, it was the guy from Gummo, the Haiti kid.
Yeah, the Haiti kid. Oh,
you ain't gay.
Yeah.
You ain't gay. You got Google Gummo if you don't.
You talking
know
about
it
Gummo,
is.
Or are you talking about Adrian Adonis?
Well, the boys
works
talking
works
both about, ways. It's a shame Adrian Adonis wasn't in that movie. He could have added to the
absolutely
whole hillbilly milieu.
But the line of the night there goes to Jimmy Hart with his "Never trust a midget. Never trust a midget." Which is that's
that guy was a spitfire. He was. Memphis is all get out and on national TV for no reason. Talk about a guy who seemed like he should be working at a carnival.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hart would be well at home, just like outside barking outside of a dunk tank, like trying to
sweetest guy you'll ever meet.
Get some rubes to come in and throw some
sweetest
softballs.
Man you'll ever meet.
That's right, darling.
That's right. Oh, that's right, darling.
We got our big main event after this.
Yeah.
It's the fearsome, evil Iranian Iron Sheik.
Boo.
Boo versus
America's
jacked
own.
Jacked up American hero, Corporal Kirshner.
Yeah.
Who Heenan very
dumps.
Tickled with himself.
Dumps
very
all over
himself,
him.
Talking about how long he's been in the Marines and he's only a corporal. Those good times.
And then he proceeds to dump all over the armed forces.
Oh, I mean, you've
which
got
is a
to.
Ballsy that's, move.
It's a working man's game
you can't
defending
do
the
that.
Country.
You Bobby can't do Hinnan's, that in Vince's WWE
he's a posh
now.
Country club man, though, yeah. Matt. Like,
he ain't serving no Oliver's
no
army,
way.
That's for
absolutely
sure.
Absolutely not. But no. Bought his way right out of that draft.
Right out of there.
So, yeah, Corporal Kirshner, not a guy I really remember from back
was
in the day
he
other than the
in,
name.
What was that the Freebirds were in? Where'd they come from? Down
came
south.
From Bad Street, Atlanta,
well, duh.
GA is where they
absolutely.
Came from.
Whatever promotion they were
like
in.
These, you know, they traveled around Mid-South. I think they were in Dallas, blah, blah, blah. But nah, what you need to know about Corporal Kirshner is not what he might have done briefly before this. I think WWE, WWF, Vince, you've trained me well. I'm talking about your 80s shit and calling it WWE.
That's right,
right
buddy.
Now. You've trained me so out. Well, you marketing goddamn genius. I think he kind of came straight into the WWF from like just somebody finding him in a Gold's Gym. And he's pretty stiff and clumsy. Didn't last long. But after this, he became a deathmatch legend wrestling as Leatherface in Japan.
Oh, that was
him? You
get
all those FMW videotapes that people were passing around in the late 90s. Leatherface is Corporal Kirshner with a goddamn Texas Chainsaw Massacre having like explosion matches and glass tube matches. So that's the weird sort of turn that this guy's career took.
That's called reinventing yourself.
Absolutely. But first you don't succeed, go to Japan and hit some Japanese man over the head with a fluorescent light tube.
That's right. And he wasn't a tall man, but I'm sure
the Iron Sheik, of course, went on to become a babbling crackhead. So
greatest of all time.
His life also took a weird turn.
Either way, but you were talking about how green Corporal Kirshner
was. Probably talking more about these guys' hilarious fates than the match they're having, because the match they were having was no fun to watch.
Not at all.
She could still kind of move here. It was solid enough, but mostly this is just an excuse to get them out here so Sheik and Nikolai Volkov could double team Kirshner, beat him down a little bit, get a heel sort of get some heel heat going, a little hate storm going, and sort of establish their evil foreign guy tag team. And that was it. We move on to the credits of the show, which was weird because it's weird seeing end credits roll at
on a wrestling,
wrestling show.
Yeah,
back
they
then,
were there.
They used to actually credit people who did the work of putting the show together.
Kevin Dunn.
Not anymore. Yeah, Kevin Dunn's name would still be on it, but apparently he doesn't want the credit.
Well,
and that
did then.
Ends the first primetime wrestling they got on the network.
Yeah, it was a chore.
You know what was weird? Is that they went, as they were tossing off to the credits, Heenan and Gorilla were, you know, plugging all the other shows. I mean, we got TNT on a Saturday or whatever. Main event on this. Yeah. They did not plug Saturday night's main event. This was April 28th, just a few days later on May 3rd. We got a big Saturday night's main event coming up.
My only thought is this was broadcast, or that would have been broadcast as opposed to this being on cable. Maybe you couldn't back then.
Yeah,
I mean, USA
something maybe, but
USA is owned by,
should have been plugging that,
NBC
these days.
But
back then,
it was probably like you can't talk about.
Next time we're talking WWF wrestling, we'll be watching that big Saturday night's main event. So 2 weeks from now,
Saturday night,
we can get that thing going. That'll be nice.
Main event. That'll be a nice thing.
It will, absolutely.
Oh, quick shout out to Gorilla Monsoon, the entire show taking the brain to task over his client,
King Kong Bundy,
who clearly, you can tell, Gorilla Monsoon, not too high on.
There's no reason for him to be doing that other than he's
not
just
too
like,
high on.
This guy's a clown. Like, I'm the greatest big man in WWF history. Like, this guy sucks.
Just still getting himself over.
Your guy sucks, Bobby.
Your guy's bullshit,
King
Bobby.
King Kong Bundy's a punk.
Talk your way out of it.
Gorilla Monsoon's where it's at.
Yeah. God bless him. Gotta have agendas. So, that wraps it up. Like you said, we're going to have a main event for next week. But before we leave, we got one bit of business to do.
One more segment coming up.
It's our signature piece. It's our all-original piece. We're the first that comes up with it. It's called The Three Count.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. When you have a sore throat, a cough, or a stuffy nose, come to the Halls of Medicine. To feel better fast, use Halls. For fast relief of acid indigestion, use 1,000 milligram strong extra strength Rolaids, the only antacid in an assortment of mint flavors. Yipe Stripes, fruit stripe gum, four fruity juicy flavors, share, dare, chew it, blow it, it's Yipe Stripes, fruit stripes regular and bubble gum.
Did you see the latest Nintendo newsletter?
Whoa, nice graphics, I'd like to get my hands on that game.
You mean you haven't played it yet? We can play it on my Nintendo Entertainment System. It's The Legend of Zelda, and it's really rad. Those creatures from Ganon are pretty bad. Octorox, Tektite's levers, too. But with your help, our hero pulls through. Yeah, go, Link. Yeah, get Zelda. Awesome. Intense.
The Nintendo Entertainment System. Your parents help you hook it up. The Legend of Zelda sold separately.
Oh.
Oh, buddy.
Got to keep drinking to get us through this second part. The three count is where we make a list of three things.
All original.
Three good things.
We came up with
this. Maybe three bad things.
Our
three
idea.
Three certain things. It's three things about a topic, just an excuse to get us talking about a topic. Since this is our first getting to know you episode, we're going to do a big one. A big one to tell you a lot about us. It's going to be our favorite 80s wrestlers overall. This is right now, here.
Right now.
In 2017, year of our Lord. Even
right
though
now.
God is dead.
When did that happen? I thought that movie said he wasn't.
Sometime around November, if I remember
Kevin
correctly.
Kevin Sorbo, he made that movie.
Oh, Kevin Sorbo, he's still alive. Okay, God bless him. So right now, if you're watching 80s wrestling,
Rassling.
Who do you like to dig up? Who do you stuff you pulling? Who you watching?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
there is a few caveats here.
Yeah, we had to.
So
because it's too obvious.
Yeah, we're not going to be talking Ric Flair.
Woo.
We're not going to be talking the Macho Man
dig
Randy
it.
Savage, because these are clearly the greatest guys ever.
That's
both of
we,
us
yeah.
would have had them in our top three, and then there
and
would
that's
just
not
been like,
fun.
Yeah, one other
that's
guy to talk
fun.
About. And so yeah, these guys, just fashion plates. They looked great. Their work in the ring was great.
Absolutely.
Their interviews were more coked out than anyone else's. And they were incoherent, but it was a controlled incoherence to
oh.
where they were still spitting out witty lines.
The controlled.
They were still telling great storylines. Like, even though the random shit coming out of their mouths was unbelievable, they were just the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and went on to have one of the greatest feuds together
over
in the WWF.
One of the first, you know, I think sort of feuds over photoshopped images, I think, too. They were ahead of their time.
So, but that was the 90s. That was the 90s. This
so,
is
yeah,
the
we're talking about who you like, who your 80s guys are. Who is your number three on this Ric Flair, Randy Savage memorial list?
My number three, and like you said, it's people that you've come to learn to enjoy now. So I also kind of took that as I tried to challenge myself here and find people that I didn't necessarily care for as a child.
That's fun. That's a nice
you know?
Little way to theme
yeah.
the list, I guess.
And so number three, guy that never clicked with me, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat never clicked with you when
no.
you were a child.
At my, well, I'm 34, so mm-hmm. like from what I can really remember things, Ricky's past his prime. He's just...
Ricky's still in his prime.
Well, yeah,
day.
But I mean, like, they're not doing anything with him in the WWF. He's just bringing a kimono dragon to the ring. And
he did become a literal
yeah,
dragon towards
yeah.
one of his later runs in the WWF.
Yeah,
yeah,
and he was more spectacle than
so, yeah,
anything
we're
else.
We're not talking Intercontinental Champion
no.
Ricky Steamboat. We're not
yeah.
talking WrestleMania 3 Ricky Steamboat.
No.
That's why he wasn't clicking with you. But looking back.
Looking ooh. Back, I've grown up. I've been able to go back and be like, oh, he's a lot quicker than everybody else. Oh, he's technically sound. Oh, he can fly through the air. He does it all. He's a one-man show.
Like he might be the only sober guy out there.
Well, he definitely was and is that.
Okay, maybe. Allegedly. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing that out there. Maybe he just could hold his liquor really good.
If you get a chance, he did some stupid show on the WWE Network where they're talking about
that
like
sounds nice.
Greatest ribs of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to his because they're awful.
Oh, no.
He's like, yeah, we used to drive around in cars with other guys, and sometimes we just break their cars.
Oh, wow.
So they couldn't drive. It was like real just like criminal talk,
yeah.
essentially, and it's just like, this isn't funny as much as it is. You're committing crimes here, Ricky.
As a joke, we would put a rock through their windshield, and then
I think that was one of the things he said.
They would have to pay to get it fixed. Very funny joke.
Guy would be driving down the highway for miles through blizzards with just an open window because we broke it.
We got glass in his eyes. He needed to go to the hospital.
But he was sober when he decided to do that.
It was a hilarious gag.
Ah, I take it all back. Turns out he is hilarious. That's you. Who you got?
Very strong
number
pick.
Number Trace.
My number three is maybe the greatest example of just masculinity that the world has ever seen. A man by the name of Ravishing Rick Rude got
ooh.
His start. I saw him do some early stuff in Jim Crockett, I think around this time, around 86. But then soon, the late 80s, he was on. he's officially ravishing in the WWF. This is when he really came into his own with the stripper music, taking the robe, doing the hip wiggle. Like, this guy had the best body in wrestling.
Yep.
Just so much charisma oozing off of him. Best mustache in the game.
Oh, hands down.
Like, this guy came out and just would look into the camera and just, like, you'd look into his eyes and you would know, like, this guy could beat my ass and then he would fuck my whole family.
Yeah.
Like, while my nose was bleeding, I was whimpering, he would just fuck every member right of my through. Family in front of me. And
start to finish.
They would enjoy it. And that that's what the thing that would really, like, traumatize me the
get
most.
Get up, Nate. You look like an idiot.
Yeah, I'd just be that's slobbering and bleeding and just, like, looking at how much they were enjoying this. And I'd be like, oh.
Nate, do that outside.
I've really been humiliated
by this
man. Do that outside.
Your new dad, Rick Rude, and I are doing something.
Oh, no. I'd want him to accept me so much, and he never would.
No.
His airbrush tights, they always looked great. Very unique. Yeah. He could, like, tailor to them to the feud he was in.
Full package.
Guy got good matches out of the Ultimate Warrior. He got great matches out of Sting. Yeah. Like, he had it all. His career ended a little bit early. I think he would have been even a bigger deal, probably higher on other people's list if he didn't hit that ring apron wrong over in Japan. They had it elevated, and he took a dump to the outside and sort of like the same deal when Michaels took that casket bump when he was fighting Taker, and then
he
lost away for 4 years trying to remember how to smile.
Yeah,
I guess that's a fun way to say detox. So that's my number three, the ravishing one, Rick Rude.
That's a good one. He almost crawled onto my list. Just because
I'm glad
how
I
great
got him
he
on
is.
Then. He deserves a mention.
I'm going to go with my number two now. And he works some of the things that you mentioned. And he was brought up earlier in this one. I just like him, damn it. Jake the Snake Roberts.
Jake the Snake Roberts. I'm glad you put him on. The only reason I didn't is because I knew we'd be talking about him earlier in the show.
Yeah. But he gets it, man. Like you said, you brought up the whole Trunks thing. Like, he had snakes on his trunk. He had snakeskin boots. Mm-hmm. Everything about him made sense. Everything he did was for his character. There was never one thing where it was like, well, why is Jake the Snake Roberts doing that? Everything made sense. Even when he was
took a powder in the ring, Gorilla pointed out, he's slithering out of the ring.
He's
look
slithering
at him slither.
Out of the ring. Everything was creepy. Everything, even when he was a good guy, you did just still didn't really trust him all that much.
Another good mustache, too.
Yeah. Oh, great mustache. He just got it, and he never was in good shape. He broke the mold of what wrestlers should be.
Yeah, very
kinda,
rare to not be in good shape and be an uppercard guy in 80s WWF.
He changed wrestling, period, just from appearance, from personality, to, you know, in-ring work, psychology, all that stuff. So I got to give it to my guy, Jake the Snake Roberts, number two.
Very deserved, very deserved. My number two, kind of taking a guy who's a little bit underappreciated, I'd say, these days.
Ultimate Warrior.
Not the Ultimate Warrior.
I guessed wrong.
I'm going with the Dynamite Kid. One half of the British Bulldogs. Probably there's never been anybody who was as intense in the ring as this guy. Just able to project sheer aggression, just sheer meanness.
Ruthless aggression?
Ruthless aggression. Wow. This guy was a rabid dog out there. Everything he did, just an extra snap, an extra pop, like going at it extra hard, extra intense. Dude flew through the air. He hit hard. He could do all the grappling stuff. Like, just you watch his matches, and they're so ahead of their time. And you get that early stuff in Japan he was doing with Tiger Mask. You watch those matches, it's like the stuff the WCW cruiserweights were doing in like 97, 98, but better. And like,
all the high flyers.
Yeah, like 12, 13 years before they were ever doing it. Like, these guys broke the mold, had great matches, and then he went on to have a sweet tag team run. He was one of my favorite tag teams in one of the greatest eras for tag teams. Those guys brought a bulldog down to the ring with them, and
what's
it was adorable. And they were just a couple of clear hoodlums out there stiffing the shit out of people, throwing
just
them around.
Potatoing folks.
Very Steiner-esque.
Yeah.
They had that cute bulldog, and I loved that goddamn tag team. And Davey Boy, man, that style he wrestled, put him in a wheelchair. Benoit tried to wrestle the same style and ended up with him killing his whole family.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You know, people who are willing to suffer for their art. I gotta appreciate that.
Put it all out
there. These assholes really made some bad choices.
Put dynamite in a wheelchair. You said Davy Boy. Davy Boy put himself in the coffin with drugs.
He did.
That's different.
R.I.P.D. Davy Boy.
I feel like there was like a groundswell, at least on the internet or the smart marks, whatever, maybe like 10 years ago, where you were hearing a lot of Dynamite Kid talk.
Yeah, I feel like that Chris Benoit
I think it was
murder,
Chris
suicide,
Benoit, and then just
kind of
took the legs out from under it. Yeah. But I feel like when Chris Benoit started gaining some notoriety and credit, people were starting to be like, well,
also,
don't forget this guy.
I think Davey Richards stealing all of Dynamite stuff and then making it go retarded might have done a little bit of people getting sick of Dynamite Kid, too.
No, I don't follow.
Might have had something to do with it.
I don't follow.
Let's move on to your number one.
All right, my number one. It could be obvious to anyone. It's obvious to me because, again, a guy I didn't get as a kid and have come to now realize as an adult, wow, this is one of the greatest of all time. I'm talking about what the fuck is that fat guy in polka dots doing on my TV?
My
Dusty Rhodes.
The American Dream.
The American Dream, Daddy. That's right, Daddy.
The mothership.
Oh, we be clubbing. He, like I said, as a kid, I didn't get it because he was just really fat from what I can remember. He was always
got
fat.
Got that splotch.
But he had,
Dusty Rhodes splotch.
I wondered if he had like an organ removed or something.
I think he was maybe growing a quado.
Could have been.
Very slowly growing a quado.
Could have been. Either way, I didn't understand why he wore polka dots. Mm. None of it. Well, I was just like.
No one still understands why he wore polka dots.
But you didn't have to. It was Dusty, man.
That's true.
But
even
no one was there to tell me that as a kid.
You dress him up like an idiot, and he still got over. He was still.
That was his thing.
Vince was never able to like put him over in the big main event matches, but he still was like upper card in the WWF.
And I didn't understand why as a kid.
A legend in Florida, a legend in Jim Crockett Promotions in the Carolinas.
That's right, Daddy.
Like, one of the greatest world champions.
Yeah, so he speaks for himself. But like I said, I just didn't understand it as a kid. But then as I grew older and learned to appreciate wrestling, it was like, oh.
You could fall down just a YouTube hole watching old Dusty promos just for like hours.
Driving around in his pickup truck.
That guy talking.
Getting his arm broken.
Just like, hey, you know what?
By a bunch of hoodlums in a Cadillac.
You know like how black dudes are pretty cool? Well, I'm trying to be a little bit cooler than them.
Yeah,
like,
check out this hat, Daddy.
Quite frankly, I think I'm a little bit more stylish and hip than these black guys.
Everything's
so cool.
Check out this J-Lo hat that I'm wearing in 1977, Daddy.
Just a lot of cowboy boots and walking around naked other than cowboy boots, from what I understand.
Oh, man. The boots. His boot game. Second to none.
On point.
Ooh, that's going to be a future top three boot game.
Oh,
or
sure.
Excuse me, three count.
Yeah.
Boot game.
Get some boot game
boot
three
game.
That looks good to me. My number one.
Big time. Here we go.
You already mentioned him. He's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Wow.
Put him in there. It's my, I think he is probably the greatest in-ring babyface of all time. Nobody fires up like this guy. Nobody shows that he's fighting through adversity like this guy. Just getting the crowd into his shit.
Yeah.
You talk about the greatest wrestlers of the 80s. We couldn't even mention Macho Man and Ric Flair because they're both just so obvious. Both of them had their best, their most legendary matches across the ring from Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Absolute truth.
That WrestleMania 3 match with Macho, that trilogy with Ric Flair in 1989. People still talk about them. They're still the greatest matches of the 80s. That's got to make Ricky Steamboat one of the greatest wrestlers of the 80s.
And that's a great point.
That Chi-Town Rumble match he had with Flair, where he comes out with his wife and his little child, and his little child's in the tiny karate gi, just dressed like that family man, which just set it up perfectly for Ric Flair to come out with like 20 women in cocktail dresses, just being the antithesis to the family man, just being the braggadocious, loud,
if there's one thing our guy the Brain taught us, don't associate with the common man.
And Ric Flair would not have looked so great if Ricky Steamboat wasn't right there with him, just being humble and
being
nice.
Being the common man.
I don't know, putting bricks through people's windows is hilarious jokes. So, maybe not the funniest man in the world. But he was a damn good wrestler.
I keep thinking about it, and it's more and more hilarious.
He threw a solid arm drag, and he threw a solid brick through a window. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, you will thankfully be remembered more for your in-ring career than you will be for your personality.
You had so much in the tank and poured so much sugar in people's gas tanks. Absolutely.
Banana in the tailpipe. He doesn't get that reputation as a jokester just by sticking bananas and coconuts in people's tailpipes.
No, he created that bit. The whole Beverly Hills Cop movie was written around the classic. Loosely written around the classic Ricky the Steamboat rib of sticking a banana in a tailpipe.
Funny stuff.
Because as Ricky will tell you, you don't get a body like that eating coconuts and bananas.
No, absolutely not. I feel like that does it. I'm ready to go eat some coconuts and bananas, quite frankly. We've talked about them enough to where it sounds pretty good. Maybe we'll make pina coladas.
Ooh.
End the night with a couple of pina coladas.
Wow.
Sounds good
to me.
Get
that potassium intake.
Yeah, perfect. Well, we've got Twitter going. We've got Instagram going.
Tweets.
Baby Oil and Blow on both. We got all those usernames. So
we should get
good.
A Facebook going.
We got maybe we'll
people
do that.
Do that.
I don't want to get on Facebook.
You just make a group and then you're like, hey, here it is.
www.babyoilandblow.com and
/ MySpace.
You know, babyoilandblow.com/feed if you want to tap into our RSS feed and get these episodes.
That's how you
hear it. Writing all your little podcast catchers. We'll get on iTunes eventually. We'll get that done in a couple weeks.
Been there once. I'll make it there again. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Been to the promised land.
Got to. Reach those heights again.
Well, thank you. That wraps it up. Baby Oil and Blow.